Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Wayward Dragons podcast, where two nerdy friends talk about a bunch of nerdy things, including, but not, I don't know where I'm going with this. Oh, yeah. No, sorry. My brain's not working today. Hi, everyone. Let's try that again. Hi, everyone. Take care. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Wayward Dragon podcast, where two nerdy friends talk about all things occult, spooky, and anything that is adjacent to those topics.
I was like, anything that tickles our fancy.
How are you?
I was like, I'm waking up. That's what's going on.
Apparently, that makes one of us.
Slowly. Very slowly. So, in this episode, we're going to be talking about auras. And I'll make a disclaimer. I'll make this same disclaimer further down. We're just going to kind of talk about the history of auras, kind of what is an aura, and the basic colors. We can go into at a later date the how the different colors are affected by different things, like what kind of work or career you should do, your relationships, how you interact with people platonically, romantically, your physical and mental health. Like, we can go into that stuff at a later date. We are just going to be talking about the basic colors and what those mean. Just for the sake of time, we don't like to make these too lengthy of an episode. So let's get into it. I gotta get my little reader here. So the word aura itself comes, it's Greek in origin, and it comes from the words meaning air or breeze. It's also known as the pure life force in multiple different countries that have multiple different names for it. I'm not going to try and butcher those. It's often shown or depicted as a thousand petal, like, lotus flower thing that, like, enshrines the whole, the head of Buddha. That's another thing that we'll talk about here in a few, how that got translated. So basically, everything in the universe is made up of energy. Energy cannot be created, nor can it be destroyed. So it's gotta go somewhere, and it takes up, like, a energy field around everything. Literally everything. Me, my cats, Johnny's cats, my dog, the trees and rocks, this life force is around everything. And it is unique to that specific thing. My Apollo's aura looks different than Salem, my black cat's, who's different from Tiger. Like, it's unique to that person. So no two auras are the same. And how one sees an aura is different. You can train yourself to see them if you really wanted to. There are people that specialize in auras, and each person, they see it differently too. Some people see it as kind of like waves coming off people. Some people might see it as like a halo type situation.
You can also get photographs of your aura.
And we'll talk about that further in, because there's other things that you can do now too. Like, you can just go have your energy read by someone. There's people, and you'll probably find them more as like an energy reader, more than like, hey, I read auras or whatever. Because a lot of Reiki healers, that's what they do, is they are dealing with energy. And we as humans we can kind of, you may not be able to see somebody's aura, but sometimes you can pick up on it. The books that I used as a reference, they have chapters dedicated to, like, senses and like your sixth sense. God help me today.
Awful. You got this.
Some people call it your gut feeling. Some people think it's your aura. When your aura interacts with, you get really close to someone, and you pick up on the energy of their aura. And this could be like you meet somebody for the first time and you're like, I really don't like them and I can't tell you why. And then months, years from now, something happens to them within the friend group. And you're like, see, I told you, like, something happened or whatever. Type thing. Some people say that your aura is your one of your six senses, that it can be one of your six senses, you know, and we'll talk about why people think that because of what your aura is connected to, kind of. So this energy field that makes up your aura is made up of electromagnetic particles that kind of just radiate naturally around your body. It holds all the positive and negative information about our past, present, and future. And because of this, it's called our life force, and it can be influenced by people in our environment around us. You know, you might have had a feeling, like I said, you might have had a feeling about someone that you just straight up couldn't explain. I get this with people. Like, I don't know why I don't like you. I just really don't like you. And then a couple months in, you start causing drama at work or drama within the friend group. And I'm like, see?
Bitch, I told you.
I almost call it like your Gibbs gut. Those of you who watch NCIS, who have watched like the older NCIS, like, you got to follow your Gibbs gut with stuff. Like, if something's not right, something doesn't feel right, it's probably not right. It's your body trying to tell you that something's wrong. And this is one of the ways that your body will tell you that something is wrong, through your aura or your gut. And this also could be like the complete opposite. You might have met someone that you can't explain it, but they feel like home and that you've known them for forever and you're so comfortable around them. And, you know, energy remembers energy. We'll go into past lives and stuff at a later date. And then you also hear that we have a saying, if my dog doesn't like you, then I don't like you either. Animals are going to be more sensitive to that sort of energy. Whether it's your dog or your cat or whatever animal that you own, if they don't like somebody, you need to pick up on that. They're a lot more sensitive than we are to energies. Whether it's some person's aura or honestly ghosts and shit, you know, they are a lot more sensitive. So where did we get this concept of auras? Where did all this come from? Where did this idea come from? Well, we've had this for a long time. We have references that can be traced back further than the glowing halos that artists used when depicting Jesus and the saints. That's how auras were depicted, was they eventually got depicted as auras or halos. That's how auras were depicted, were halos. And halos is somehow some people see things. Energy has been the basis of life for many different cultures. You know, that's kind of the root of their culture, for many ancient civilizations. And they would write about the light that would radiate off of said humans and animals in holy places. And that's how they started to depict that in their art, was through halos or that golden light around people. The most famous person that would depict these things, he was a man called Pythagoras. We know him for many different things. He was born in 570 BCE, so before Christ. He is best known for his contribution to mathematics, the Pythagorean theorem. But in his own time, he was also known as a mystical teacher. He would teach about the light that was around all beings. The next person that kind of talks about this is Joan of Arc. She would write about divine light. You have Saint Teresa of Avila. She would write about her experiences with hearing divine voices and seeing visions of light. There's references in both testaments of the Bible of the divine light or the light of God. Not like we're going to get super Christian on you, but there's references before the Bible. And then as we started getting into modern times, if you said that you saw colors radiating from people, that most likely would warrant you a trip to the mental asylum. So most mediums and clairvoyants kind of at the time of like the spiritualist movement and stuff, they wouldn't say that they could see these things because they didn't want, they're already being subjected to a lot of skepticism. They kind of just didn't want to add more to their plate. So most people would just say that they couldn't see what they were seeing, and then that's how things went. Yeah. And then with the invention of technology came different way. People wanted to see if they could see these things, and a lot of this is still present with today with a lot of ghost technology. So like your stuff for like EVPs and all that stuff that they tried to do to see electromagnetic fields. This also translated into trying to see auras. The first person that really wanted to start doing this was Nikola Tesla. Poor man.
Good old Tesla.
And then you have people that started to get into aura photography. They wanted to measure the EEGs, which are impulses, and tiny electrical currents in the brain, in also polygraphs. So that polygraphs measure the fluctuations of electrical impulses that result in change of emotions. So they thought between the two, they could figure out how to photograph your aura. Simon Kilarin invented Kilarin photography, which would capture the electrical fluctuations between these, and they tried to put it to film, and this is where aura photography started. This person is best well known for their photos of how animals or people would interact to changes in their environment. By 1975, human auras were being studied at universities. These studies revealed not only did the energy fields around people and they weren't just around people and animals, but like trees and rocks and pretty much everything around us that's living. But it also showed that the energy field is connected to different parts of your body. This might sound familiar because we've already done an episode on this. We did a multi-layer episode. But they figured out that your aura is connected to your chakras through all these studies. And that the aura correlates with your chakra points throughout your body and all the acupuncture points on your body that is used in Chinese medicine. So they saw a correlation between those things. So it finally confirmed that, you know, those cultures for a really long time were really onto something. So now, with that being said, we're going to talk about, because it's connected to your aura, or because your aura is connected to your chakra, your aura can have multi-layers, just like your chakras, because you've got one all the way down. So the first aura layer, this is going to be the one that's going to be closest to your body. It represents the physical and etheric etheric bodies. This is ether? Words are hard this morning, as we've already shown.
Yeah. Well, you're just not having a good morning.
No, I don't think. Well, that's like part of my migraine symptoms is I use the word thingy a lot. God love my husband. So I go, I need the thingy. And he's like, what thingy? There's like five of them. Words are just hard in general right now until this passes. But this first aura layer, this is going to be, like I said, the layer closest to your body. This is the densest of the subtle energy. It's also known as prima chi. It exists within us and around every cell, stores our vitality. It stretches 3 to 5 inches around the physical body and is associated with the base and sacral chakras. Your next layer is obviously further out than that. It's called the emotional body. The emotional layer is part of both the etheric and lower astral layer and is connected to our personal feelings and the sacral and solar plexus. So we're going, as we go out, we're going up our body. This extends 6 to 9 inches from the body and is associated with feelings about the self and those desires that would master us if we didn't control them. Next layer is the mental body. This is part of the lower astral layer and lies about 9 to 12 inches from the body. It's concerned with our rational and mental activity, which is constantly changing. Negative thought forms attract negativity, while positive thought forms connect positive to their positive thoughts attract positive influences. This layer holds all that we have learned in our lifetime. This is associated with the solar plexus in the throat chakra. Next layer, astral body. This is our fourth layer. This extends 12 inches or more away from the body and connects to the heart chakra. So it's associated with love and acts as a bridge between the lower chakras connecting us to this physical life and the higher chakras, which connect to our spiritual being. So this is your in-between. Next layer, fifth layer, spiritual body. This extends 2 to 3 feet from the body, and it relates to the interaction of the personality, the soul, and divine will. This level is associated with learning to trust. So it's the level we tune into when we like someone or dislike somebody. This is your gut. This layer is your gut. That sixth sense that we were talking about. This is connected to the brow, sacral chakras, as well as the throat chakra. Six chakras, the celestial body. This level is more subtle than the others and relates to our finer feelings and our divine qualities, such as unconditional love, passion, courage, higher aspirations. It's the plane of meditation rather than thought. It extends much farther from the body and it can reach out as far as 5 feet. This is associated with your brow and crown chakra. Last layer is the seventh layer. It's the casual body. This layer is connected to your crown and to the universal energy. It can honestly kind of extend as far as you need it to. It's the strongest, most resilient layer containing the main current that runs up and down the spine and nourishes the body. This layer is a pure creative thought. This is also the layer that contains the astral data bank for this lifetime. And this is also known as the soul's purpose or life's purpose. So it's connected to it's connected to all of your chakras. This is the one that kind of goes everywhere. So like we've already talked about, each chakra is connected to a different aura. And as you go, if you start at the bottom, so your sacral chakra, that's your first one. As you go up, you go out in your auras, if that makes sense. So they are linked. The more better you are physically, the more better your aura is, and vice versa. But I mean, that can go a lot of different ways. some people have a chronic illness and they're not really going to get any better. So my cord is in the way. So a lot of the books that I used for this episode, so Auras, Your Personal Guide by Jalynn Goodings, and What's My Aura by Mystic Michael, author of the Angel Numbers book. They have a lot of different exercises in these books. What's My Aura, they have a test that you can take, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. But like I said earlier, we're only going to talk about the basic colors of auras. These books go into depth of like subcolors. They go into how each color interacts with like what career you should choose and how you interact with relationships and all that stuff. What's My Aura, they go into like how your aura is with like your past lives and all that, like auras, spiritual connections, what your aura says about you. And then they show you they've got exercises of like how to create your like auric bubble, how to strengthen that sixth sense in your other senses. Like, she has a lot more exercises than the other one. The other one goes in more depth of like other stuff. Like for like jobs and career, the past life reflection and all this stuff. Now to find out your aura, you can go find somebody that reads them. You can do a camera. There's glasses that you can have. There's apps on your phone. You can take a quiz. I wonder if I can find it real quick. That's the chakra one. Oh, yeah. So, nope, that's not what I want. Yeah. So, like, I'll show you this. So, like, the camera, if you go get your aura done with a camera, it can come out a couple different ways. It's on the camera, I guess. Because it could be, like, kind of a general thing. Yeah, there's apps, glasses, cameras. You can kind of figure out how to find your own through, like, meditation and stuff like that. So, that's your call. I did do the aura quiz, so I don't know if this is my definite color until I go have it read by someone. But what do you think my color is? And then I'll guess
your aura color.
Yeah.
Aura? No, I don't know. I'm gonna say green.
Close. So the test in What's My Aura, there's like 9 different sections, and then whatever one scores the highest is your color. And I scored highest in the last one, which means that my aura color is turquoise.
Huh.
It's like,
interesting.
I'm like, oh, wow, that makes sense. Because my grandma always called me her little chameleon. What's your color?
What do you think?
I don't know. You said it's like red? Yeah,
so I have been told by multiple people who do auras that I am like a mix of purple and indigo, but primarily purple.
Okay. All right. I can kind of see that, I guess. All right. So now we're going to talk about the 9 essential aura colors. We're going to kind of talk about, we're going to start from red and work our way down. So the first one we're going to talk about is red. These people are strong, assertive, natural leaders. They often need to be in charge.
Is that why you said I was red? Because you think I'm a assertive natural leader?
No, you just said that your color is not something that's normal. That it would take you by surprise. So that's why I was like, okay.
So you don't think I'm a natural leader? Is that what you're saying?
No, you're a butthole just like I am. You can be a bossy butthole just like I can be.
I actually get stuck in the leader role more often than not. So
yeah, that's why I was like, and that's why I was like, I know you are stuck in that a lot. Yeah, they need to often be in charge. They regularly find themselves saying what needs to be said, however uncomfortable that may be. So they're the people that speak their minds, and they're like, oh, well, I'm just saying the truth type thing. They're good at selling others on ideas, motivating teams. They can work well under pressure. They're driven solely by logic. They create places to feel the pressure they crave, so they are constantly evolving into a better version of themselves. This book says they're sensual, vibrant, passionate, and extroverted, which kind of makes sense. Full of enthusiasm and love of life. They get bored very easily. They have short tempers. So they're motivated, they're ambitious, character driven. These people will most likely be police officers, firefighters, service person, salesmen type people. We won't get into preferred fitness activities. Compatible romantic partners, blue and indigo. Their biggest concern is injustice, which makes sense if you're a police officer. Well, yeah. If you're in, like, the police force, that makes a lot of sense.
Agree to disagree.
That's what I was like, it is there, but it's not.
I mean, it's their biggest concern is causing injustice. Is that what it is?
No, just so I forget.
No, that was a joke. That was a joke.
This book goes into blue next. These people are naturally loving and healing people. When blue auras give to others, they connect with the divine. They feel a sense of purpose in their life that fulfills them. They're typically in positions where they are caregivers. They tend to be natural empaths, which means they feel there's emotions and pain. They end up feeling responsible for the pain they see in others. So you need to watch your own energy kind of thing. Because you can blame yourself if, like, the person that's sick doesn't improve. So this person would need to be constantly cleansing themselves, which we'll get into in our next episode, is the proper way to cleanse yourself and stuff like that. Blue auras have a hard time receiving, even though they are very good at giving. So this is someone that has a very hard time, like, receiving gifts, compliments, all that stuff, but they will not hesitate to help somebody else. They're extremely difficult to shop for. People will always be attracted to this energy, as you are a sense of peace. You have a no-nonsense attitude. Oh, if it's more dark, if your blue is more dark, you have a very hard time expressing yourself. Key traits of these people: healing, kind, helpful. These people will most likely be teachers, therapists, nurses, healthcare workers, romantic partners. These people have to have those who have a shared vision of family and togetherness. They really work well with any aura color. Their biggest concern is making people feel welcome, which makes sense. Yellow. These people are naturally curious. They have an eye for detail while they always look for ways to improve in all that they do. They don't mind receiving constructive criticism or self-help suggestions. They can tackle large, overwhelming projects with ease. as they enjoy the challenge. From the outside looking in, they can do anything and do it efficiently, almost to the point where it looks very easy. They are often perfectionists and they are very hard on themselves. They don't like to be out of control with their emotions, as they sometimes come off. So they will come off as cool in a crisis, or like super unemotional, like non-existent emotions. They're stoic survivors. These people, these are the people everyone turns to in a crisis. They have a tougher time living in the present moment than any of the other aura colors. They have to be reminded to take care of their emotions, as they often are downplayed. That's not really helping. This book is not really helping. Key traits of these people: you're curious, you're organized, introspective. Aligned jobs would be like an event planner, an accountant, interior designer, social media coordinator, real estate agent, romantic partner capability. It has to be someone who understands their need for order and shares their overall vision for life. They work well with green or blue. A relationship with a red aura can be problematic and can be quite challenging. Biggest concern is lack of consideration. Purple. There's a fine line between intuition and social society's version of reality. And purple auras live on this line. They are artistic and they are creative, and their minds are constantly moving and brainstorming and thinking of ways to facilitate growth for themselves and the world around them. Because of this, they constantly crave change and they need outlets to distract themselves from the daily routines of life. They can be rebellious and free-spirited. They don't feel a need to be in charge, but they most certainly do not like being told what to do. They are naturally more intuitive than others. They feel before they know and are often correct. Therefore, they will nurture confident relationship with their natural instincts. Purple auras often attract attention and have what is referred to as the it factor, which makes them stand out in a crowd.
In other words, I got the riz, as the kids say.
Yeah. Well, like, now that I'm reading this, it's like, this is you to a degree. Damn it, I lost my place. They learn to get used to this constant attention. Many in the entertainment field have this color of aura. They have a hard time sticking to one career in their lifetimes, as they love to spiritually evolve via challenging life situations. They do have to watch out for self-destruction, as they can use it as a quick substitute for a life change. These people are creative, eccentric, non-judgmental. Jobs: freelance writer, performer, entertainer, artist. Romantic partners: strong-minded partners who can challenge and inspire them. They work well with passionate red auras, but can find other purple auras difficult to have long-lasting relationships with. Biggest concern is stagnancy, which makes sense. That definitely is you, to a degree. Mm-hmm. Green auras, they are content in a solidarity vibration, even when surrounded by lots of people. Greens tend to exist in their own reality, separate from everyone else. These people are guided by logic and an unearthly ability to separate emotion from any decision-making process. They are strategic thinkers. They connect to their spiritual well-being through a passionate application of their knowledge to out-of-the-box challenging projects. They are workaholics. Without a purpose, they can completely detach themselves and kind of become robotic. They're interested in making a difference, fixing what's broken. They have a global awareness. They're very earth-based. I mean, it's green. these people are intelligent, solidarity, systematic. These people would be good architects, engineers, CFOs, scientists, and media producers. Romantic partners, we need to be very independent, who can understand and support their visions of whatever. They work well with yellow and indigo. And their biggest concern is waste, which makes sense. Indigo, so that's kind of purpley blue. Indigo auras are capable of viewing and experiencing everyone's point of view, so clearly that it makes them feel like they're responsible for the happiness of those around them. They can energetically feel the inner traumas that others hide and they forget about and build walls around. They fixate on those wounds in others, and they will change their own behavior to accommodate them in an attempt to heal this person. They often need long periods of time alone to kind of recharge. If they push themselves to be in the frequencies of others too often, they can suffer physically, mentally, or spiritually. The journey for an indigo aura is about taking the time to see and validate their feelings in this lifetime. They are gifted with analyzing behavior and creating a way for others to tap into what they have picked up on. These people tend to be introverted, compassionate, and highly sensitive. They will be a specialized therapist, a nonprofit organizer, hospice nurse, animal rescuer. Their romantic partners need to have strong personalities who are very independent. Also, they get along with other green auras. Their biggest concern is miscommunication. Okay, we have a couple more. Pink. Dude, we're going through all nine. I'm already here. Because we got pink and then turquoise and then we got orange. Pink, they're optimistic about everything. I mean, when you think of pink, what do you think of? Is freaking Barbie, in my opinion. The color itself has been ingrained in the collective consciousness with idioms such as rosy personality. For someone who looks at life through rose-colored glasses, they tend to be positive and kind. People who are idealistic, even in a situation that is well past redeemable to the rest of the world, so you're optimistic. They can be kind of naive, having their head in the clouds. They can seem like fools. They're very compassionate, family-oriented, helpless romantics. They honestly, truly believe in the good of others until otherwise. And I think even then they'd probably make an excuse for it. They're extremely loyal. Key traits, romantic, innocent, and childlike. These people tend to be performers, influencers, social media marketing. Romantic partners need to have an understanding and protect them. They work well with yellow and purple. Biggest concern is negativity, which makes turquoise. Like pools of water, turquoise auras are naturally gifted reflectors, able to hold an image of anyone they spend time with and reflect back what they see in their own mimicked mannerisms or patterns. This allows them to show the people around them whatever it is they need to see in order to fix or heal something. They are often incredibly confused about what direction they should be taking in life and what interests actually belong to them. They can feel ignored by others and totally unseen. Identity can be a journey for the turquoise aura. To find themselves, they must travel inward rather than along any path deemed traditional by societal standards. They are remarkably flexible and can fit in basically any mold. They're incredibly intuitive and empathic. They're often healers in some form. They have the fewest number of boundaries towards others' emotions and realities. Key traits, old soul, spiritual, reflective. Aligned jobs, energy healer, doula, acupuncturist, and aromatherapist. Romantic partners, open-minded, compassionate partners. Sorry, there's a dog howling. They work well with green, blue, and pink. Biggest concern is being ignored. And the last one, orange. They represent the embodiment of change. They invoke all things bold, new, and different, and carry that inspiration wherever they go. This is paired with strong universal manifestation powers. It seems as if just by thinking something, they create it in their own reality. They often are highly motivational and they demand space. They don't fear what most of us do. In fact, they will run like full speed at it. They are often challenging to interpret. They don't feel in control of their ability to create. But when they don't, they will become anxious over time. Orange auras can feel angry and irritable in that type of situation. Therefore, they're the people running the projects and often are at the center of most social circles. They're very concerned with how people perceive them to the point of obsession. They prefer to work alone so they can be super detail oriented. They're very focused, enigmatic, and energetic. These people will most likely be entrepreneurs, business development specialists, and investors. Romantic partners need to have their own vision and, you know, kind of share it with them and kind of go with them with their goals. They get along well with indigo and blue auras. This other book, Auras and Auras, Your Personal Guide, she goes into black and white, which I found was kind of cool. And she kind of goes into the yin and yang kind of thing. When gray appears in your auras, you may be bored with life and you bury your emotions. But yeah, she goes into a lot of other stuff like silver and gold. And if it's
silver and gold.
Huh?
I was saying silver and gold.
Oh.
Silver and gold.
So those are the basics for your auras. Like I said, we won't get into like the other parts of like what your aura should do for a job and, you know, stuff like that. But I thought that was kind of interesting because, yeah, my grandma used to call me her little chameleon. So.
Sounds good.
So, now we will get into our cards for this week. I weirdly pulled the same card again.
I think it's trying to tell you something.
Probably. So I pulled the Queen of Wands. So the Queen of Wands is a courageous and individualistic spirit. When we meet her, we are struck immediately by her bright nature, which masks underneath it roams a healthy sense of determination and courage. Whenever she comes across something that sparks her passion, she becomes a whirlwind of activity. She wants something done, and she wants them done right. So she takes the reins and makes sure that the standards that she set for both her work and herself are met. Luckily, she's quite capable of being an efficient leader. And though she is usually loved for her passion and sincerity, she sometimes becomes overbearing. But we need to usually overlook that because her intentions are pure. Cards lesson, I inspire others through my passion and determination.
Okay. I got the Princess of Wands. And, you know, I actually, because the site I usually pull from didn't have the Princess of Wands on it for some reason. I actually had to, like, struggle to find even any sort of explanation on this based off of, you know, other people's things. Because, believe it or not, I am not super well-versed on all things that is tarot. This card represents dynamic passion for life in general. If it comes up relating to inner energy, then it will indicate that you are overcoming old fears, breaking out of old patterns, and setting your life free. There will be confidence decisive action and assertive leaps forward into the heart of your life. It will often come up to indicate that you have broken through habitual limitations and restrictions, thereby freeing off of the power to be used constructively. It can indicate a spiritual breakthrough, which will always include the courage to face your fears and see them for what they truly are. One strange fact about unacknowledged fears is that they take on the darkest, most terrifying shape with which your subconscious can imbue them. Yet you can drag them out into the light of day. You suddenly realize that what you were so scared of might A, never happen, B, not be as bad as you thought it would be, and or C, you've probably got what it takes to deal with it. Thoughts on what those mean together?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Keep going down your path with determination in the same passion that you showed in the beginning. It's gotten a little hard because you're dragging stuff up and you're healing yourself.
Maybe. But yeah, because that's what that's part of growth is overcoming those obstacles and pushing past that.
Because it gets uncomfortable. It gets kind of weird sometimes, but yeah, you need to, maybe you're kind of second guessing things and you just need to remind yourself that you started this path for a reason because it's gotten uncomfortable right now and to keep going down that path because you started it for a reason and you kind of need to remember why, kind of look back to remember that we can keep going.
I can see that. Yeah.
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 Okay.
So don't forget to like, rate, review, subscribe, tell a friend, share.
Yep.
All the things. Leave us star reviews and comments because algorithms are dumb and those sort of things.
Yep. Next week, we're going to be talking about different plants to use to cleanse your home. We're going to be talking about, sage and all that stuff, a lot of that. So it's going to be kind of a controversial episode because of cultural appropriation. So we'll address that in that episode. So yeah, please join us on Facebook and Instagram. Join me on Fable as the Wayward Daughter. We can talk about all things books and all that jazz. You can kind of see the books I pick for the book club and stuff. Honestly, Fable is a lot better than Facebook because that's all you talk about. It's like Facebook meant Goodreads. So cool.
I was like, Facebook, what are you talking about?
Fable is like Facebook met Goodreads because you've got all your lists, but it's virtual book clubs and stuff. So you can talk about, if you have that one book where you're like, I need somebody to talk to, you're going to have hundreds of thousands of people be at your fingertips to talk to you about that book. Like, you can find a book club with that book. Trust me.
Until next time, I'm Johnny.
And I'm Kelly.